Hello, Jim.
Hey, John.
Jim, are you there?
Yes. Can you can't hear me? Hello?
Hello?
Test, test, 1, 2. I should be on.
Hello?
Welcome, warrior. You are listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Your hosts, Jorn Sutai Vampir and Jajim Vestai Jajim, will explore Klingon culture as it appears in Star Trek literature. Perhaps you yourself can hear the cry of your inner warrior. If so, go to www.kag.org and make your presence known. Learn how to join the Klingon Assault Group and begin your journey along the way of the warrior. Now, here are your hosts, Kapla. Welcome to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Book Review Podcast. I am Jajim.
I am polishing my desk. I'm sorry. I am Jorn.
And today, we are going to be looking at another book by Keith R.A. DeCanado, this one called A Singular Destiny, published in February of 2009. So, John, why don't you go on and launch into our back-of-the-book summary of the plot.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The cataclysmic events of Star Trek Destiny have devastated known space. Worlds have fallen. Lives have been destroyed, and in the uneasy weeks that follow, the survivors of the Holocaust continue to be tested to the limits of their endurance. But strange and mysterious occurrences are destabilizing the galaxy's battle-weary allies even further. In the Federation, efforts to replenish the diminished resources have given succor to millions of evacuees that are thwarted at every turn. I just had to edit the editor's edit of the description of the book. God, are these guys paid for a living? On the boundaries of the battered Klingon Empire, the devious Kinsasha sense weakness and opportunity. You'd think they were Ferengi. In Romulan space, the already fractured empire is dangerously close to civil war. As events undermining the Quadrant's attempts to heal itself become increasingly widespread, one man begins to understand what is truly unfolding. Sonic Pran, a teacher, diplomat, and sometime advisor to the Federation president, perceives a pattern in the seeming randomness. And as each piece of evidence falls into place, a disturbing picture encompassing half the galaxy begins to take shape, revealing a challenge to the Federation and its allies, utterly unlike anything they faced before.
Well, there it is.
Well, I was going to say, because if they faced it before, it would have been an earlier novel, and we wouldn't be reviewing it in 2021.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about our overall impressions to start this one out. I'll just go ahead and start out by saying I did read the Destiny series several years ago. It's been so long, I don't remember most of it. Mostly what I remember is that the Borg just raised hell all over the place. This book is some of the aftermath of just how bad things were. And I was expecting a good story and wasn't disappointed. This is a very busy book, but not overly complicated. And it's fast-paced and fun to read.
It was written by Keith.
Yes.
You know, you expect good things from one of Keith's books. And I don't think he's really disappointed us yet in any of them.
Ever.
I mean, there are some Star Trek books that, you know, well, let's face it. Star Trek started out publishing books, and I'm not talking about the novelizations, started publishing books from fan fiction, literally. So to get an author like Keith that can churn out a good book time after time after time. Man, I don't know why they benched him.
Well, yeah, that's hard to say. And really, yeah, we don't need to know that. All we need to know is we want...
No, we need to complain about it, though.
Yeah, we want Keith back. And so, I don't know. Maybe someday. Let's hope.
Yeah. Like I was saying, I read this book without having read Star Trek Destiny. It takes a little catching up to do, but frankly, you can get through it. Keith does enough of a job to get you familiarized with what's going on to keep the book moving. Now, I don't think you've read the Destiny books, Jim.
Yeah.
So he's not referring to the Borg invasion from Star Trek First Contact, is he?
No, this is not. This is not part of the television series universe or the movies universe or any of that. This came, the Destiny series is after everything is over. There's an Enterprise F, I think, in there. There's a whole lot of things. Worf, I think, is first officer of the Enterprise. Riker has been made an admiral, and he's actually Picard's commanding officer. So
Picard is in charge of the F.
Right. And
oh my God, Picard finally got an F.
But there's a whole lot of things that have happened after Nemesis. And I couldn't summarize it all because there is just tons of information out there. And it's incredibly good, all of it.
Which makes me wonder why CBS went and took the events of Nemesis forward to do Picard instead of some of this other rich history that the writers have put out.
Well, and the whole thing is it boils down to this question of canon again. And the books, the novels, are not considered canon at all.
But you're seeing Disney taking the books, the Star Wars books, and canonizing some of the events by putting them in the series that they're putting out now.
Right. I don't think that'll ever happen with Star Trek.
Which is too bad because there's so much good material.
Oh my gosh.
In the books.
I'll tell you what, as far as what is and isn't canon, I couldn't give three hoots about what is or isn't canon. Those books.
Not if it tells a good story.
No. Those books that are being put out by the authors today, and you know who I'm talking about, David Ward, David Mack, Keith R.A. DeCanado, Michael Jan Friedman, those guys that have been writing these books are, canon or no canon, they're good, they're fun to read, they're very entertaining, they're amazing books.
Even the newer authors, if you looked at the, if you go back to that trilogy we reviewed of very recent Star Trek books about the Klingon Empire and how they had a Klingon trying to fragment it again in the name of, God, I can't think of his name. The guy from Star Trek 3, the Klingon from Star Trek 3.
Kirk.
I'm sorry?
Krug?
Krug, yeah. Claiming to be a descendant of Krug, and he's trying to tear apart the Klingon Empire. It's a fairly new series, a fairly young author, and boy, he does a wonderful job with it. There's a lot of material there, guys.
I only scratched the surface. I'm naming about five authors. There's David R. George. There is Una McCormick. I'm going to leave somebody out if I try to list them all, so.
Yeah. I think the biggest problem is that every time they've remade a movie, every time they've relaunched a series, all of the fans go, have you been in a bookstore lately? There's a lot of material here. Why don't you use it? Why don't you use something fresh?
Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
Keith here has come up with something fresh. They could do a whole series, it sounds like, from what you said about the Destiny series to me privately. They could do a whole series on the Borg invasion of the Alpha Quadrant and its aftermath.
Oh, absolutely.
On CBS, Paramount Plus. Now, we can't even keep the names the same. And since that's usually to protect the innocent, I'm wondering who CBS is trying to protect.
Themselves.
Inquiring minds want to know.
Themselves, of course. So, were you done with your overall impressions then?
Pretty much. You've covered everything with what you said already.
Uh-huh.
I was shooting in the dark, trying to figure out what was going on. But you had the basic gist of the Destiny series and knew what was going on.
Yeah. Well then, we've got a lot of characters in this book to follow. And I think rather than are there any characters in this book that stand out that we would want to talk about before we went into what happened for the story?
I think it is really nice that Keith brought back the Gorkon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And that Keith gave Lasik, who...
Oh, Leskit?
Basically, from what Clegg said, was never going to be bright enough to be a captain, gave him his own ship. And we even see Torg now has grown up enough to have his own ship.
Yeah.
And Drex, the son of Martok, who was sometimes a really good warrior and sometimes falling down on the job, had his ship and an honorable end to his ship and his life, because, yeah, the Klingons were no slouches in this one.
No, not at all.
And they were all recognizable.
Yes. Oh, yeah. It was really, really neat that Leskit, Tok, and Tok, they were out there captaining their own ships, and, yeah, that was fun to see. And Leskit's a good captain. Came in and saved the day, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Now, here you have listed some YouTube videos that we will pass along in the show notes. A Filk song called Band from Argo and Golden Vanity and Sailing Down That Golden River and Crossroads Blues. What is that about? How does that relate to the book?
In the epilogue, Keith sets up a concert of sorts. They're winding down, they're doing stuff, and... He throws a bunch of tunes at us, but he's listed like five songs that this group is doing. I mean, literally, he listed these songs.
Okay.
Four of them actually exist. Today, there's only one song on that list that I could not find.
Okay, and which one was that?
The one that's all initials.
Oh, okay. So,
could not figure out what that guy was, but the rest of them were old folk songs.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the case from Band from Argo, a Filk song.
Yeah.
And which is interesting because for those people who aren't aware of it, a Filk song is a song that has had its lyrics changed. Music's the same, but the lyrics have changed. And they have a science fiction or fantasy twist to the song.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Weird Al Yankovic's The Saga Begins.
Yeah.
So, Band from Argo is a obscure reference that Keith either had to experience in fandom or, you know, really have gone looking for something, because it's probably the best Filk song for a Star Trek-related theme without it being an overly Star Trek-related song. And, of course, a overly Star Trek-related song would not have been part of a mini jam session that a bunch of musicians winding down from all these conflicts would do.
Yeah, the music was an important part of this book. So, Anyway, what I...
At least that what you could put on a banjo.
Yeah. So one of
because that's what Sonyak Pram carried around with him.
Yes. So one of the things that I found about this book that kind of fascinated me was that each chapter ends with some extra material in the form of a letter or a communique or part of a report. They serve as snapshots of the aftermath of the Borg invasion that are not necessarily directly related to the story in the book. It doesn't take you out of the story, but it gives you a little more of a picture of how bad things actually are.
Well, not only that, but these extra snippets are absolutely necessary to flesh out this entire huge, and I have to underline that word huge, universe that Keith is trying to expose his readers to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, without these snippets, we may not know what's going on off on, you know, 1,000 light years away.
Oh, yeah. Well, and as a matter of fact, you go to the end of Chapter 7, and you get a casualty report. And if you look through the list, there's a lot of names, just a whole lot of names. And then as I was reading through the names, I came along Velana Torres as a casualty.
You know, it was established in DS9 that you're not supposed to read those casualty lists because it'll make you depressed.
Yes. Well,
and make you want to trick the Romulans into entering the war.
Mm-hmm. Well, seeing B'Elanna on that list, it did make me very sad. I mean, there's a list. I don't know how many names there are on the list. There's a lot. And right? Oh, I don't know. It's towards the end of the list is B'Elanna Torres. And it served to make me pause and think, you know, how sad that is. Here's a character that we know, and she's gone, you know.
Now, how long is she going to be gone?
Well,
because one of the problems with being a writer is you can't just kill off the named characters.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, it gets done, though. It is done. And there are characters that go away that get killed, and they don't come back in the novels. I guarantee you that.
Here's another name in here you might be interested in. Myra Paris.
Huh.
Don't know. Could be.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and that's just it. It could be. So,
I don't know. Did she have a son or a daughter on the series?
I believe it was a daughter.
Okay. Well, this could be that daughter. I don't know. Do they ever name her?
I don't recall. I don't think so, but I don't recall.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, yeah, well, and, yeah, I think I remember noticing that name, too, and wondering about it. So, yeah.
Well, the implications are quite drastic because there are some Klingons out there, they're the Delta Quadrant, who mm-hmm. have some religious connection with B'Elanna's kid.
Yes. So let's talk about the story itself, and I kind of broke it up into four parts. The first part, I kind of focused on Sonic Pran. The Federation President Bacco calls on Pran to smooth relations between two factions of the fractured Romulan Star Empire. They're maneuvering for control of the entire thing. Pran manages to bring the leaders, Donatra and Talora, together. Donatra offers help to Talora under the urging of Pran, but Talora refuses to accept. And further, Talora informs Pran that the Romulan Star Empire will no longer be accepting aid from the Federation.
And at the time I was reading that part of the book, you know, and later on, you kind of got to be wondering, what the hell's going on here? Free aid? Free food? Why are you... Are the Romulans that arrogant, that self-reliant, that they won't even accept it? It gets explained towards the end of the book what's going on, but
it does.
In the meantime, it's a massive query as to what's happening.
Yeah, well, it's a hint as to what is coming. Everybody is down and everybody needs help. And Talora is just flat saying no. And Pran even had to trick a Romulan centurion into taking a shipment that was sent specifically for the Romulans. And Pran had to argue with this centurion for quite a while to get him to just take the stuff that they brought for him.
I can't help but draw comparisons to Picard, where you've got the Romulans complaining that the Federation just left them out to hang, you know, after the events of Nemesis.
Yeah. No, we're talking two different sides of the same coin and timelines. Yes.
Are you sure you didn't have it right the first time? It was food aid. We may have been talking about two different sides of the same corn.
Corn, yeah, okay. All right. So,
can't let a good slip go.
No, by golly. Now, Pran is all the way through this book, but there's a couple of major things that he is involved with. The other one, other than the Romulans, he is using one of Aventine's runabouts to make some other unauthorized trips here and there to investigate some things that have happened around. For instance, a ship full of refugees shows up at Cestus III, claiming to have been turned away by the people of Zalda. They were no longer going to take refugees. They just absolutely refused and didn't give any explanation. And when Pran investigates, he finds out that's not the case. That Zalda is more than happy to take refugees, and they don't have to be sent somewhere else.
Because Princess Peach is such a nice person.
Well, yes, of course. So what happens is he's going around and looking at things, not explaining to anybody what he's doing, but he definitely understands how things work in the Alpha and Beta Quadrant. And what winds up happening is he finds some kind of plot going on to undermine the Federation's rescue efforts and drive a wedge between Klingon and Federation relationships.
And unfortunately, he doesn't have a sidekick to go along with him, because it's just like from the old Sherlock Holmes tales. Sherlock is figuring all these things out, but he's doing it in his own framework of mental discipline. Mm-hmm. It takes a sidekick like Watson to try and put things in perspective for the reader.
Uh-huh.
So Pram doesn't have that sidekick other than the two Federation officers that are with him, and look how much they argue with him all the time.
Security officer. But they allow him to take, they allow him and help him take the runabout places that he wasn't supposed to take them, because he was...
What are you going to say to the representative of the president?
Well, Dax figured it out. But, no, he had a security officer and a pilot for the runabout, and he was supposed to go and talk to Donatra and talk to Talora, and then he was supposed to meet the Aventine, captained by Ezri Dax. He was supposed to meet them back at Capella 4 to help solve the mining problems they were having. And he didn't. He went to Zalda. He went to other places to do this investigation and uncover some things. And totally sanctioned by the Federation president and her staff. However, Dax was not at all happy with Pran hijacking one of her runabouts to do this without getting authorization from her first.
And I don't remember which one it was. I think it was the pilot was complaining all the time that she finally got herself assigned to the Aventine so she could use the transwarp drive.
Yes.
and
slipstream,
fly through the universe. And wait a minute, now she's still having to deal with warp on this shuttle, and the Aventine is out there having all the fun with that new drive system that she wanted to be a part of.
Yeah, I know. So yeah, that was kind of funny, but at the same time,
and that doesn't happen just once in the story.
No,
she's going on and on about it.
Yeah, she's not happy about not being where she needs to be. She'll get back. That is, if she doesn't get court-martialed for running Pran all over the galaxy.
Well, if she does get court-martialed, they got to take her back so she at least get to use the transwarp drive once.
At least once, yes. But no, she's not going to get court-martialed, and neither is the security officer that went with her. So now we move to Capella 4, and we have a Topoline mining operation going on, and you discovered some things about Topoline.
Based on the website Memory Beta. Okay, there's a Memory Alpha for a lot of the details from the series and movies. Memory Beta has a lot of periphery information on it.
Right.
It's a chemical element, atomic number 117, which is interesting because they're mining it directly, and most elements that you mine are combined with something and you have to extract them, and you know, they never, but Keith's probably not the chemist that I am, so probably didn't think about it. But it's an important material in the construction of atmospheric systems, right. Whether they're, like you say, atmospheric domes here,
mm-hmm.
or the life-sustaining equipment on board starships. And one of the big things they're trying to do in the Federation and the Klingon Empire is to rebuild the fleets that were lost to the Borg.
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't there another element, another material they were also needing to mine, and they were having trouble getting it too?
I'm not recalling that, but...
Yeah.
So
it's just a matter of getting the materials. Again, another thing, too, is Topoline is one of those things that you can't, like Latinum, that you can't replicate.
Right.
So they have to get it and do whatever they need to do to make it whole and build their ships.
Right. And Capella 4 is there are rich, rich deposits of this material there, and it's desperately needed because... Not only are the fleets devastated, but so are the surfaces of the planet, of many planets the Borg got to. So,
you know, and this is an interesting thing that I don't think anybody's really ever thought of. Why are certain planets rich in these very high number chemical elements? A sun can only make elements up to iron, all right? To go beyond iron, you have to have a supernova-type event
mm-hmm.
occur to get these to form. You know, unless we had to have a supernova event in the vicinity of Earth to get the uranium deposits that we've got today.
Mm-hmm.
Why does Capella 4 have a massive amount of element 117, which is... what, 25 elements above uranium? I think it might be an interesting story for some Federation scientists to go and try and figure out, based on who's got what large reserves of what super heavy element and how they were formed.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, and there's always the need for dilithium, and who knows? Yeah, you can.
And the excuse for that could easily be, once we figured out how nature makes the stuff, maybe we can figure out how to make the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's very true.
So, Keith, if you're listening, there's a whole new series of books for you to work on.
Yeah, you know, I think he's quite busy already. So... at any rate, just to clear up what Memory Alpha and Memory Beta are, Memory Alpha is the wiki for things that are canon in Star Trek. And Memory Beta is the wiki for non-canon things in Star Trek. So,
like Topoline.
Right, Topoline, stuff in the books, characters that don't appear on the show but do appear in the books. You can find out more about them on Memory Beta than you can Memory Alpha. So, at any rate, equipment and materials are needed to upgrade and repair existing operations on the planet, and Dax has the materials needed. And she goes to Capella 4 to deliver these things, and is not going to deliver them until the saboteur who destroyed a plant on Capella is found and neutralized, because she's not going to send this stuff down and just have it destroyed.
Now, this isn't her instructions either. She's doing this on her own. Smart move, but she's doing this on her own.
Now, this brings up a little bit of a problem with the Capellans, who are not going to allow any human Starfleet officers on the surface of their planet, because
we'd say xenophobe.
Yeah, no, they're plain mad, because Leonard James Akaar decided he was not going to be the tier of the 10 tribes on Capella 4, but rather he became an admiral in Starfleet, and so his name is Mud, as far as Capella 4, the people on Capella 4 are concerned. They want nothing to do with him, and they want nothing to do with humans, because that's how they relate. So Dax gets around this by sending a Takaran chief of security named Lena Kader to the planet to investigate, and the Capellans are fine with that, as long as it's not a human.
You know, I was always wondering what the planet of origin of good old Harry was.
No. Not that Mud.
Oh, not that Mud.
Mud with
just
one D, not two Ds.
I thought that would be how mad they were.
Yeah, no. Well, they want nothing to do with Leonard James at all. So, but he's doing just fine as head of Starfleet security. He, as a matter of fact, he's the one that promoted Riker to admiral in an emergency situation. So the materials are delivered. The saboteur, the person who carried out the sabotage, is found, but there's still more to the story, and we get that more towards the end. So it's you know, and that's a good chunk of the story. Now, the part that we are mostly interested in, as far as this show is concerned, comes up next, and it is the Kinshaya versus the Klingons.
Hey, they see weakness in the Klingon Empire and decide to grab a couple of planets.
Well, the first city on Kronos has once again been destroyed. As a matter of fact, Kronos isn't doing so well as a whole. All right. The Klingon capital is now on the planet Tygokor, if I'm saying that right. Tygokor, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, but at any...
I'm not even going to try.
So, and at any rate, there's a lot of problems. There's a need to rebuild. The fleets are down. Communications are difficult, and when the Kinshaya, who are religious fanatics, show up at the planet Kyros, they decide they're gonna take over. They're gonna make sure, they're gonna kick the Klingons off the planet, and they're just gonna take the planet for their own. And this is encroaching on Klingon territory. Well, there just happens to be a ship in orbit around Kyros, commanded by Drex.
Who happens to be Martok's son.
And a battle ensues, and Drex has his ship blown right out from under him. He's completely outnumbered. He fights gallantly, but he's totally outnumbered, and there's just no way for him on one ship to take care of this entire planet under the onslaught of the Kinshaya.
Which is a nice thing, because in the earlier books that Keith has written, Drex has not always been the best Klingon warrior that he could be. He's had his ups and downs, really significant ups and downs. And by that, I mean he's really phenomenal one time and really bad another. Mm-hmm. So to have him go out as a strong commander of his ship with good tactics, you know.
Yes. And that was
it's a good ending for the guy.
It is. It is. So Martok calls General Clegg. Clegg has gotten a promotion, and he has an entire fleet, and he sends the fleet out. Now, but Martok tells Clegg to split the fleet in two. Half of Clegg's fleet is going to go and take back Kyros, and the other half has to do convoy escort duty.
And they love that.
Yeah. Oh, yes. And Clegg argues, look, you know, I can't be expected to be able to take care of this Kinshaya problem without my fleet. You know, half the fleet may not be enough. And Martok snaps him back very quickly and says, you're a Klingon. You're a Klingon general, and you will do this, and you will succeed. And, of course, Clegg, being the Klingon he is, agrees and goes off to complete his mission.
Now, he doesn't complete the mission with just the ships he's got. I mean, it's a glorious battle. I mean, he's at the point where he could be actually winning until the Kinshasa forces get reinforced.
Oh yeah. Well, there are cloak ships everywhere, and all of a sudden, in the middle of this battle, just, you know, it's kind of back and forth between the Klingons and the Kinshaya, and then all of a sudden we get appearances from the Breen, the Gorn, and the Zenkethi joining in, and the battle turns bad for Clegg at that point.
And then I believe that's the point where the rest of his fleet has completed the convoy duties, and they show up.
Well, they actually left the convoy. They just plain, some of the ships left the convoy to join up, is what happened.
Either way, they show up.
Yes. Well, you know, and the Gorkon is about to be destroyed. All it's going to take is one more shot. Their shields are down. The defenses are down. A lot of the weapons are no longer working, and
the rest of their fleet that they had with them is gone.
It's gone already, yeah. And so we've got some problems. And Clegg says, "Well, you know, if we're going to go down, we're going to go down fighting." And then all of a sudden, here comes uncloaking. We've got Talk. We've got Leskit. We've got several other ships show up on the scene and help to save the day for the IKS Gorkon.
And once they've got that done, there's another character we get reintroduced to. The leader in charge of all the Gorkon land forces now is Wohl.
Yes.
You know, so even she's back in this novel.
Yeah.
Even she's been promoted.
Oh, big time, because she was just the leader of the 15th squad.
Just below the squads that were the elite of the Gorkon.
Mm-hmm. Well, now she's in charge of them all, and she takes her troops down and clears the planet, which apparently there wasn't a whole lot of problem on the planet.
I can't remember which one of the two. The Kinshasa took two planets, and I can't remember which one it was that was almost completely barren because of the Borg invasion.
That would have been Hatoria.
Okay.
I think. I'm pretty sure.
Well, that's the other one.
Yeah. Kyros was habitable, but both of them were problem. But the thing is about both of those planets is that they are key planets in the relationship between the Klingons and the Federation. And if an enemy took those two planets, it would open things up to cause problems between the two.
something about shipping lanes, and I'm keep saying to myself, you've got a warp drive. You don't have to worry about wormholes or folding space or gravity wells or any of that stuff. Why do you even care about shipping lanes?
Well, if you have a base nearby one, you can disrupt trade quite easily.
Okay, but here's the thing. You always see, especially in Star Wars, you always see, we're going to put a blockade around this planet. Okay, and the blockade is almost always on one side of the planet. Mm-hmm. Almost always around the equator on mm-hmm. that side of the planet. And I keep going to myself, every time I see this, why don't you just go to the other side of the planet and leave? Or if they're going to ring the whole planet, the northern end and the southern end, you could go straight up or straight down and kind of like leave the system really quick.
Yeah. I'm just glad I don't have to find out.
I don't know. Keith, there's another story for you.
Oh, boy. So, the last section has to do with the outcomes of what we have, what we have gone through. I call it a look at the future, owing to what Pran learns during his travels. The Federation and Klingons learn there is a new threat to deal with, who have dubbed themselves the Typhon Pact. This alliance includes the Romulans, the Tholians. Now, the Romulans, not Denatra, but T'Lora's group. The Tholians, the Breen, the Tsenkethi, the Gorn, and the Kinshaya. And the story with all of that, with the Typhon Pact, appears in 7 novels of the Typhon Pact series. So this is kind of a bridge between Destiny and the Typhon Pact series. So
that's interesting, because really, I kind of would like to know how the Kinshasa stay in the Typhon Pact. Religious zealots are not known for getting along with infidels.
Right.
And the Romulan Star Empire, while they're not religious mm-hmm. zealots, you can think of them as religious zealots in that they have a xenophobia so strong that they just don't get along with non-Romulan people.
Now, what I'm trying to figure out, okay, and I'm not exactly sure how it worked out this way, but I read the Destiny series. I've also read the Typhon Pact series, but I completely missed Singular Destiny in that first reading, and I don't understand why.
Because you didn't have it?
Well, I didn't have it, but apparently I didn't look in the right places to see what was coming up next. My goal was to read, believe it or not, my goal was originally to read every Star Trek story that ever was published and read the ones that were going to be published.
Did you put a date on that? Because they tend to put out 2 books a month.
I can't remember. I looked it up, a list of the novels, and I can't remember whether I came up with 14 or 15 pages of just the titles that I put on.
Yeah.
I put on a clipboard and started keeping track of them. And I don't know if I'm going to live long enough to succeed.
No.
And still read
you can
other
come
books.
Come over here and look at my library and decide you ain't going to live that long.
Oh, well, yeah.
And they're not just Star Trek novels over here.
Right. So, but at any rate, I'm not sure how I missed this one.
14 pages of novels, and you're wondering how you missed a particular line in that list?
Well, being it was a connecting material between Destiny and Typhon Pact, I don't know how I missed this the first time around. But
well, depending on how you put that list together, or if you used one of the Star Trek lists, they're listed more in order of publication than in order of, they might be socked together by series types, but if you look in the back of any of the books, it'll say, well, like this one. Let me find their list of upcoming. Oh, yeah. 2008, the Destiny series. 2009, A Singular Destiny. Titan, Over a Torrent Sea. Voyager, Full Circle. Next Generation, Losing the Peace. Voyager, Unworthy. Titan, Synthesis. 2010, The Typhoon Pack.
Yeah.
You know, no, they're not grouped. They're not grouped together. You'd have to be looking for them.
Yeah, it sounds like publication dates.
Yeah, they actually give the month that they're going to be published in.
Yeah, things do bounce back and forth. Anyway, you said you have listed in our notes a concept to discuss.
Oh, well, we tend to do concepts, and I'm trying to find something. And what have I got here? This book focuses on what is happening to the worlds after the large Borg invasion of the Destiny trilogy, and it actually has little to do with Klingons except for one major battle to retake the planet Kyros, and how General Clagg carries out that mission and avenges Martok's son.
Yeah.
You know, as far as Klingons are concerned, that's it.
Yeah.
Well, everything else is Federation.
Well, and Federation, Capellan, there is a lot of stuff going on in this book.
Even Capellan is Federation focused, because the Federation needs that Topolene to build more ships and to give material to the Klingons so the Klingons can build more ships.
But yeah, we did get some good Klingon material in this book. So what do you have a favorite point of plot you'd like to bring up?
It's that space battle.
Nah.
You know, it was done well. Keith wrote a really good scene to it. And again, like I said before, we get to see Leader Vol having been promoted and is in charge of doing the land invasion of the planet.
Yeah, that was definitely good.
Unfortunately, we don't get to see the battles. That would have been nice, but you know, at least we get to see her again.
Yes, it was definitely a small part of the book, but huge in its impact. My non-Klingon favorite point of plot was how Sonic Pran used his mixed heritage to his advantage, and how he seemed to be able to disarm and talk to anyone, no matter who he talked to, no matter how they reacted to him at first. He was always able to get them to at least listen and talk. The fact that he was a musician and that helped him to focus was very fascinating to me, and I enjoyed his exploits and how he always seemed to be right. He knew what was going on. He has enough experience working with the Federation hierarchy that he is able to figure things out, you know. And then there was that earthquake on Ardana that his wife was killed there towards the end of the book. That was really sad.
Now, I have to say, too, that they really didn't need to use Sonic Pram as being a quarter Vulcan, a quarter Betazoid, a quarter this and a quarter that, because you can get people of a single race who are willing to take an interest in the people that they are trying to negotiate with, they're trying to talk with, trying to impress. If they're willing to take an interest in what those people want, they're willing to be listened to unless they're really, 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 have really, really, really been oppressed.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow I think that the fact that he's a quarter this, quarter that, quarter everything is just a way of saying he's a ultra special person and nobody else can do this kind of thing, when in reality, if you're willing to listen to what the other guy wants to say, it goes a long way to making a bond between you and the other guy that will eventually lead to something constructive, because there's always a way out for both sides in a negotiation, unless, of course, the negotiation is over. You don't believe our religion, so I'm going to kill you. Aside from that, there's usually points that both sides can live with to make everybody, you know, not so miserable.
Right. And then, well, we'll that's one of the themes. Let me finish up with my other favorite point of plot. My Klingon favorite point was the battle to take back Karos and Leskett showing up in command of a ship. I'll tell you what, this character, Leskett, was great in Deep Space Nine. He was even better in the Gorkon books, by Keith. The consummate, excuse the term, smart ass, and absolute unique warrior as far as Klingons are concerned. And to see him in command of a ship, even though Keith mentions that he protested taking command vehemently, but still, and to have him come to the rescue was great. So then,
there's a problem here.
Yes.
Keith never said who his chief engineer was.
Okay.
You know, his girlfriend.
Oh. Okay.
Did she come aboard with him, or did she go back to redesign ships?
I don't know. As far as I know, when we left her with the last Gorkon story, she was reporting for engineering on the Gorkon.
But her relative was almost of age to join the Defense Force. And as soon as he did, she was going to be out.
Yeah.
But if her lover was going to get his own command, I would think she'd want to, you know, jump on board.
Yeah. Now there's, and there at the end of there, we, if you recall, Kurak and Leskett stayed together because Leskett's wife gave him a divorce but let him live there. It was a complicated little setup.
Yeah.
Now, did she...
Despite the fact that Klingon divorces are very clean-cut and very easy.
Very quick and not real expensive. So, all right.
No, I think we actually have a culture on Earth that has a similar tradition for divorce.
Yeah.
So it's not actually that new.
Oh, okay.
I think there's one of the Middle Eastern cultures that the woman just has to say three times, "I divorce you," and they're divorced.
Oh, nah, that's, I don't know about that. I've never heard of that. But so anyway, you started to talk about Sonic and his mixed heritages, and you covered that pretty well. I think that Keith was reaching for showing us that Sonic is so successful because he has a balance, okay? Humans, Vulcans, Betazoid, and Bajoran, okay? You have the human, the emotional people. You have the Vulcans who are the logical. You have the Betazoid who can empathize with others. And you have the Bajorans who are spiritual. So you have a more complete person when you have a mixture like that, a person who thinks differently. And I'm wondering if that isn't what Keith went after.
Yeah, I think he went after it that way, because you can have those same qualities in a single species person.
Yeah.
But to have different species in his bloodline kind of does that without having to say how this character learned to be empathetic,
right?
To think logically, to be able to use their emotions to come up with solutions to things, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Yeah. So maybe it's a message to us. You know, be passionate like a human, but balance it by also by being as logical as a Vulcan, and be as empathic as a Betazoid, and as spiritual as a Bajoran, and you'll be able to do anything. I don't know. It's just,
yeah, it could be, you know.
This is something I came up with.
As stupid as a human, as crybaby as a Vulcan, as I know what you're thinking.
Yeah.
I know what your mother said. As a Betazoid, and as put down and conquered as a Bajoran.
Jeez, John, I had this fluffy moment going on, and you had to come in and charge in with that.
There's always two ways to look at a problem.
Yeah, there is. Okay, so another theme you have is diplomacy, that we talked some about that. Family discord and resolution. Where did you find that? In Pran's family. In
Sonic's family.
Yeah, in Pran's family.
He and his son weren't talking.
Or hadn't for a long, long time. And it's really sad that the death of his wife had to bring them together again.
You know, and that's another thing is you've got Sonic, who's a quarter human, and isn't she Vulcan?
Yes, I think so.
So she's expecting sex every 7 years and he's looking for every night?
Oh, no. Let's not go there.
Well, it's something to think about when you're talking about different species.
Okay, well, hold on. We know that the Vulcan males experience Ponfar every 7 years. Now, we've never been told what goes on with the females. And you know what? You want to know something? I don't want to know.
Well, I can't go and say, you know, look at Troy's mother as far as Betazoid sex habits are concerned.
Yeah.
You don't want to go there either.
No, absolutely not.
So he's got one half, you know, driven to go do it.
And then projecting. Okay, never. We're going down a road here I don't think we want to go down. Okay. More than gold-pressed latinum is being used for currency in our galaxy. Give me some examples.
Don't the Typhon... Isn't one of the clues the fact there's a Typhon pack? A new coin... pops
yes.
up?
Mm-hmm.
Hey, there's a new currency in the galaxy.
Yeah, we have a Ferengi who is actually responsible for the problems on Capella. She's bankrolling the Saboteur, and the coins are obviously not Federation. They're not gold-pressed latinum. They're not from the races that we know. They're from... the Typhon Pact races that we mentioned earlier.
Now, here's another question that you just brought up. Does the Federation have a currency?
Well, no. The Federation does not, but obviously other races do. And apparently the standard, at least in the Alpha Quadrant and the Beta Quadrant, is gold-pressed latinum.
Only if you're dealing with the Ferengi. If you're dealing with the Federation, they give you a replicator and you don't need it.
Right. Well, and we don't care about material things, do we, in the Star Trek universe? What we care about is improving ourselves.
Glad you added the Star Trek universe, because, yeah, I still got to buy shit.
Yeah, don't we all? So, I came up with post-traumatic stress disorder and how people are affected by a devastated society, even in the face of victory. Everybody got together. They eradicated the Borg. The Borg are no more. They will not be coming back. They're gone. And they're extinct. But look at all the hardship getting rid of them has caused all over our end of the galaxy. And you know there are massive mental illnesses going on due to this.
You know that, but I don't think you see that in this book.
Well, you do.
I don't think Keith made that a big thing in this one.
And it's not huge, but if you look in those end of the chapter extra items that Keith adds, it's in there. You know, people are sad, they're upset, they're angry. They don't know where to go. They can't look for revenge because the people that caused them their pain are gone anyway, but they still need to deal with this. So I think he brings it up in especially in those, I'm not sure what you would call them, just notes at the end of the chapter or extra material at the end of the chapter.
Interludes.
Yeah. Okay. And how about your closing thoughts? It's about time we wrap this one up.
Well, it's a Keith novel. It's a tightly plotted novel. Takes you everywhere. It's everywhere. and he manages to do it in under 400 pages.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it gets the job done, especially if he's trying to segue into this new Typhon Pack series that they've come up with. And hey, Keith does a good job. That's all you can say.
Well, yeah.
If you guys haven't read the book, go out and get it.
Or anything else he writes.
Yeah.
I just got on my Kindle a notification that he's done a novelization in the Alien universe.
Of what?
The Alien. Alien.
Of what?
What do you mean of
what?
You
said a novelization.
Yeah, a novelization. A new story in the Alien universe.
Okay, if it's a new story, it's not a novelization.
Okay, well, if you want to get technical.
A novelization is of an existing movie or TV series.
Okay, he's been playing in somebody else's sandbox. So, anyway. As my closing thoughts, another great book from the master, Keith. He never fails to turn in a solid and fun-to-read story. I wouldn't call this a Klingon book, per se, but the Klingon exploits we did get were worth the price of the book, as far as I'm concerned, and it was fun to see the new character development with Clagg and his cohorts. So that's my overall impression, or my closing thoughts, rather. And so next month, we're going to be looking at an older book, one that's kind of hard to get your hands on. It's called World Without End by Joe Haldeman. And
it's the only book that Joe wrote in the Star Trek universe.
Yeah.
His brother Jack wrote one and only one also. And these are back from, what, the 70s, I think.
Yeah, this is original series. Kirk versus the Klingons again. Not a real long book. It's a shorter novel.
It's interesting because this is Joe having to play with the ability to move faster than the speed of light. He's was actually known at this time for the Forever War,
mm-hmm.
which was about Earth fighting an alien culture, but you couldn't go faster than the speed of light.
Uh-huh.
So it took forever to get to a battle.
Yeah.
The troops didn't age because of the time dilation effect.
Yeah.
It just took a lot of time.
Right.
To get there.
This particular novel, A World Without End, I saw somewhere as I was doing a search for it that there are copies available, a hardback copy for like $948.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you'll find the Forever War hardback is up in that price range also.
No kidding. Yeah,
I wouldn't doubt it. I've got a signed book club edition of that book, but
neat.
Even that's probably worth a pretty penny right now, but
well, no doubt. You know, if who knows. So you can find us at kag.org/podcast. Everything we have is posted up there. You can
Here.
Yes. You can find us on Apple Podcasts. You can find us on Google Play or whatever they call that now. And you can get in touch with us on Facebook. You can get in touch with us through email or through the CAG website or through Discord. There's numerous ways to talk to us and let us know what you think. So get out there and spread the word.
We want to know what you think because... yeah, we're kind of running out of novels, and we need some more ideas to bring you new episodes of the CAG Bound by Honor podcast.
Yeah, we are definitely running out of Klingon-related books. Now, who knows?
The well's going dry.
I think since we have a Xeno Legion, I was thinking about this the other day. What are we going to do when we've read everything Klingon? And I thought, you know, well, since we have a Xeno Legion in CAG, maybe we can branch out and do a few of those books, too.
Which we did at one point. We did the
Riansu series.
Saga.
Yeah, the Riansu series. We did that. There's some Ferengi stuff out there, and there's other things. And we'll look at that as time goes on. So thanks for listening to us here on Bound by Honor. I have been Judge M.
Yeah, well, I'm still Jorn.
And join us next time for our next very exciting episode. Kapla!
When we pulled into Argo Port in need of R&R, the crew set out investigating every joint and bar. We had high expectations of their hospitality, but found too late it wasn't geared for spacers such as we. And we're banned from Argo, everyone! Banned from Argo just for having a little fun. We spent a jolly shore leave there for just 3 days or four, but Argo doesn't want us anymore.
You have been listening to Bound by Honor, the Klingon Assault Group Book Review Podcast. Bound by Honor is brought to you by the Klingon Assault Group and is produced by Admiral Kirk Zantai Loon Keech. If you hear the call of the warrior, visit our homepage at www.kag.org to learn more about what it means to be Klingon. Perhaps you have what it takes to be one of us. Listener feedback is always welcome at podcast@kag.org. Kaplop!